Well, it's over to me then. Good evening, everyone. Thank you to Iman, Shafi, and Lisa for the wonderful introductions, and to everybody who has helped put this event together, especially the many boxes of coffee in the back that I was pleased to see. My role is really hopefully to facilitate a conversation between really with our two guests, two individuals whom I admire greatly, and with you. So I'm going to try my best to do that. I thought I might just give a couple of comments to begin with about the context of this discussion. You know, we live at a moment where everything seems to run at an accelerated pace. We're months or weeks, really, before an election, where it just seems like the country gets extra crazy. And I'm not telling you any secrets here. So I think it's very important to take time like this to reflect and to think about where we are. When it comes to the issue of Palestine, I think there are several contexts that we can look at. First and foremost is the context in Palestine, where if you look at the situation, it seems really very difficult and grim, almost as bad as it's ever been. Gaza remains under siege. It's become a normalized situation in that the new normal is always lower and lower and lower, and what was deemed outrageous at one point becomes just background noise on another point. Today, for example, Israel carried out an extrajudicial execution in Gaza that used to be news headlines. Now it's lucky if it is in the bottom of the news briefs. Our young people, hundreds of thousands of students in Gaza, half the population are children, continue to have their hopes of an education in the future crushed by a suffocating siege, by really an iron ceiling that occupation and dispossession impose on them. Within Israel, within the pre-1967 ceasefire line, Palestinians live as second-class citizens amid an Israeli political atmosphere and social atmosphere of ever more extreme ultranationalism and discrimination. And millions of Palestinians continue to live in the diaspora, waiting for their rights to be recognized and restored. And that's a situation that seems endless. It seems like there's almost little hope for it to change. On top of that, over the past decade, Maha and I were talking about this before, in Palestine, we see, this is something that's not talked about, but it's something I've been researching, we see Palestinians being used as guinea pigs, almost, for some of the most cruel neoliberal economic policies. You have the World Bank, the IMF, the United States, the European Union, in a sense, using Palestine as an experimentation ground for the many of the neoliberal economic policies that we see tearing communities apart from Greece to Spain, to the United States, all over Africa. All of this is happening in Palestine as well. It's part of the context. A second context is, of course, I mentioned at the outset, the US political system, where it seems that every 4 years and every day in between those 4 years, our politicians are in an arms race to see who can be the most unquestioningly pro-Israel and increasingly anti-Palestinian. Anti-Palestinianism has now become a sine qua non of high office in the United States. We've had politicians in the past year declaring that Palestinians don't exist or are an invented people or have an inferior culture to Jews, and it goes on and on. And no national figures standing up to say, wait a minute, This is unacceptable. U.S. military aid to Israel is, as President Obama keeps reminding us, at unprecedented levels. Unprecedented levels. The Obama administration has pledged $30 billion in new weapons to Israel over a decade, and every year or so they add a little bit more to that, amid a situation of no accountability. A couple of days ago, some prominent leaders in various churches wrote what I consider to be a very mild letter to Congress. They sent it to every member of Congress, calling on the United States Congress to investigate whether U.S. military aid to Israel and Israel's use of weapons provided by the United States to occupy Palestinian land, to besiege Gaza, to carry out killings, and so on, whether this military aid violates the terms of the U.S. Arms Export Control Act, which is a U.S. law that's been on the books for decades that makes it illegal to export weapons to countries that use them to violate human rights. It must be the most violated law in the history of the United States. But nevertheless, this letter went out from the church leaders, and the reaction from the Israel lobby was swift and thank you. I was looking for a polite word. I was, some expletives came to mind. But apoplectic is perfect. It was another word that begins with AP that I've been using, but isn't appropriate for family viewing. And using this tactic of saying that if you dare to question Israel or unconditional U.S. support for Israel, then you are attacking Jews. Then you are engaging in something hurtful. And this tactic has been used to silence people for many, many years. Of course, it's a belied every day by what I hope will be the final and more hopeful part of my introduction, which is the third context, which is us, and which is what is a growing national and global movement for justice in Palestine, and which is very visibly and very palpably a movement that is incredibly diverse, that includes people of every background, Palestinians, people of every faith, people of no faith, queer people, people from the labor movement, people in education, in the churches. This is a movement that is incredibly diverse and that embodies the values that are inherent in the demands that Palestinians are putting forward. And it's a movement that is increasingly built and centered around the Palestinian-led movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. We'll probably talk about that, so I won't say anything, but just to reiterate the three demands in that call that I think unify all Palestinians, regardless of their political affiliations. You won't find more than a number of Palestinians I could count on one hand would disagree with the three demands. The end of occupation of Palestinian Arab land, the end of all forms of discrimination and racism against Palestinian citizens of Israel, and the full restoration of their rights, and thirdly, that the right of return of Palestinian refugees be fully promoted, respected, and implemented according to UN Resolution 194. Those are the demands of the movement, and the great thing about those demands is that they fulfill the rights of Palestinians, but they don't threaten the legitimate rights of anyone else. Because making Palestinians whole as human beings, respecting all their rights, doesn't take away from the rights of anyone else. So I wanted to just say that we're part of a hopeful movement, a movement I feel energized by. And as we grow, and as more and more people come to us, it's important to have conversations like this, where we can begin to think about some of the strategic questions that face us. So let us proceed to Mikko, who is going to open with 15 minutes, and then Brandt, and then we're going to take it to everyone. Okay. Thank you.